The air in the foyer of the new house is exactly 68 degrees. It is a precise, artificial chill that smells of silver-gray paint and the chemical sweetness of brand new wall-to-wall carpeting. Sunlight hits the floor-to-ceiling windows in the great room, casting a long, sharp rectangle across the hardwood. There is a single, thumb-sized smudge on the glass of the front door, right where the deadbolt meets the frame. It is the only thing in the house that isn't perfect. Julian's hand is on the small of my back. It is heavy, warm, and steady. He is holding a glass of chilled champagne in his other hand, the bubbles rising in straight, methodical lines. The condensation from the glass has left a damp ring on the granite countertop of the kitchen island. To the left of the sink sits a leather-bound folder. Inside that folder are 42 pages of legal parchment, each one bearing a signature in blue ink. My signature is always slightly smaller than his, tucked into the corners of the lines he claimed first. The silence of the suburbs is heavy. Outside, the irrigation system clicks on, a rhythmic, metallic ticking that sounds like a clock counting down in a room I can't leave. I look at the smudge on the glass again. It's oily. It's the kind of mark left by a person who was trying to see if the door was truly locked before they walked away. You don't realize how heavy a house is until you realize you're the only one holding it up. When Julian first showed me the renderings, I thought about the light. I thought about the way the soaking tub would feel on a Tuesday night after a long shift at the gallery. I didn't think about the way a debt functions like an organ, something inside you that you can't simply cut out without bleeding to death. "We're anchors now, Elena," he had said the night we signed the preliminary disclosures. He'd laughed, the sound rich and vibrating against my shoulder. "No more drifting. We're finally solid." I liked the word solid. It felt like safety. My life before Julian had been a series of rentals, of flickering overhead lights and credit card balances that hovered just at the edge of manageable. Julian was the one who taught me about the architecture of a future. He talked about credit scores the way artists talk about light, as something to be curated, protected, and leveraged. My score was a 780, a pristine, untouched landscape. His, he explained with a sheepish, boyish shrug, had been bruised by a bad business partner in his 20s, a technicality, a ghost in the machine. The house required a bridge loan, and the bridge loan required a guarantor with a clean profile. It was a temporary measure, he assured me. A six-month window until his dividends cleared and we could refinance in both our names, or perhaps just his, to protect my assets. It's funny how a man can make a cage sound like a gift. He described the mortgage as a protective barrier, a fortress he was building around me, and I wanted to be inside. I wanted the crown molding and the smart home security system that chirps every time a window is nudged. Now, I stand in the kitchen and watch him drink. He hasn't looked at the damp ring on the granite. He knows I'll wipe it up. "The interest rate on the secondary line of credit adjusted today," I say. My voice is level. I've practiced this tone. It's the tone of a partner, a collaborator, not a subordinate. Julian doesn't turn around. He's staring out at the manicured lawn. I saw the notification. "It's fine, El. It's just a fluctuation. It's an extra $900 a month, Julian. And the balloon payment for the down payment assistance is due in 3 weeks. You said the dividends would be liquid by now. Markets are volatile. You know this." He turns then. And the smile he gives me is the one he used when he proposed. The one that makes his eyes crinkle at the corners, making him look vulnerable and wise all at once. "Why are we talking about math on our first night in the dream? Come here." I don't move. I stay by the sink, my fingers tracing the edge of the granite. "I checked the account this morning, the one we set up for the escrow. It's empty, Julian. You moved the funds back into your private brokerage." The air in the room seems to get thinner. The HVAC hums, a low-frequency vibration that I can feel in my teeth. "I reallocated them," he says, his voice dropping an octave. "It's not a threat yet. It's a correction. The yield is higher where they are. If we leave them in the escrow account, we're losing money to inflation." "I'm managing our wealth, Elena. That's my job. Your job is to make this place a home. My job is also the reason we have the deed, I remind him. My name is the only one the bank cares about. If that balloon payment isn't made, it's my credit that burns. Not yours. You're not even on the note. Julian sets his glass down. The clack of the crystal against the stone is the only loud thing in the room. He walks toward me, his steps muffled by the expensive carpet. He stops just inside my personal space, close enough that I can smell the expensive gin and the mint he chews to mask it. And if your credit burns, he whispers, leaning down so his lips are inches from my ear, what happens to your career? The gallery doesn't like scandal, do they? They certainly don't like financial instability in their directors, especially when you're handling multi-million dollar consignments. He reaches out and tucks a loose strand of hair behind my ear. His fingers are cold. You see, Elle, that's the beauty of being solid. We're joined. If you walk out that door, you're walking into a fire. You'd have to sell the house, which you can't do without my signature on the title, which I am on, by the way. I'm on the deed, just not the debt. Clever, right? I feel a coldness start at the base of my spine and bloom upward. I think of the exit mirage I had nurtured all afternoon, the idea that I could simply call a realtor, list the place, take the hit on the commissions, and crawl back to a studio apartment with my dignity intact. You wouldn't let it go to foreclosure, I say, though it sounds more like a question than I intended. You live here too. I have cash, Elena. I can live anywhere. I can rent a penthouse tomorrow and be perfectly comfortable while the banks spend 3 years stripping this place to the studs. But you? You'd be ruined. Professionally, socially, financially. You'd be a person who couldn't even lease a Honda, let alone manage a high-end art portfolio. He pats my cheek twice. It's a playful gesture that feels like a slap. So, let's stop talking about balloon payments. I'll move the money when I feel like the timing is right. Until then, you'll keep the accounts in good standing. You have that inheritance from your grandmother. It's sitting there, doing nothing. Use it. That was for the wedding, Julian. The house is the wedding, he says firmly. This is the commitment. This is the for better or worse. Now, be a good girl and go get the mail. I think the new property tax assessment arrived. He walks away, heading toward his wood-paneled study, the one room in the house I'm not supposed to enter without knocking. I walk to the front door. My hand reaches for the handle. I look at the smudge again. I realize now that it isn't from someone trying to get in. It's from me. I remember leaning my head against the glass yesterday, closing my eyes, and wishing I could just evaporate. I open the door. The evening air is thick and humid, a stark contrast to the 68 degrees inside. The streetlights are humming. Across the street, a neighbor is washing his car, the spray of the hose a cheerful, mindless sound. I could run. I could leave the keys on the hook, walk down the driveway, and keep walking. But I think of the numbers. I see them in my head like a red digital readout. 780. If I leave, that number drops into the 400s. I think of the gallery owner, Mr. Sterling, who looks at me with such pride because I am stable and responsible. I think of my mother, who told everyone that her daughter finally married up. If I stay, I am a prisoner in a 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom tomb with vaulted ceilings. If I leave, I am a ghost. I walk to the mailbox at the end of the driveway. The flag is up. Inside, there is a thick envelope from the bank. I don't need to open it to know what it says. It's a notice of delinquency. Julian must have intercepted the previous ones. I stand there for a long time, the gravel of the driveway digging into my soles. I look back at the house. It's beautiful. It's exactly what I asked for. The lights in the great room are warm and inviting. From the street, anyone would look at that window and see a woman who has everything. I see Julian's silhouette in the study window. He's on the phone. He's laughing. He looks like a man who doesn't have a care in the world. And he doesn't, because he has outsourced all his cares to me. He has turned my own integrity into a leash. He knows I am too proud to fail, too terrified of being less than, and too invested in the image of the life we've built. He didn't just want my credit. He wanted the fact that I would do anything to protect it. I turn back toward the house. I walk up the stairs. I step over the threshold and close the door. I hear the deadbolt click, the smart lock engaging automatically. A feature I once thought was for my protection. I go to the kitchen. I pick up the microfiber cloth I keep under the sink. I walk to the front door and I wipe away the smudge on the glass. I rub until the surface is perfectly clear, perfectly transparent, perfectly cold. I walk into the study. I don't knock. Julian looks up, his phone pressed to his shoulder. He looks annoyed, then sees the look on my face, and his expression softens into that predatory warmth. "Changed your mind about the inheritance?" he asks. "I'll transfer the funds tomorrow," I say. My voice is dead. There are no feelings left in it. It is as hollow and functional as the dry wall. "Good girl," he says, turning back to his call. "I knew you'd see the logic." I go to the great room and sit on the velvet sofa. I don't turn on the television. I don't read a book. I just sit in the 68-degree air and watch the shadow of the window move across the floor as the moon rises. I am 32 years old. The mortgage is a 30-year fixed. I calculate the days. 10,950. I wonder if the carpet will hold its color that long. I wonder if I will. I realize I am waiting for something, but I don't know what it is. Perhaps I am waiting for the house to swallow me completely, so there's nothing left for the bank to take. Or perhaps I am just waiting for the next smudge to appear on the glass so I have something to do besides breathe. The irrigation system clicks off. The ticking stops. The silence that follows is the heaviest thing I have ever felt. It is the weight of a dream that has finally come true, and the realization that I am the only thing keeping it from collapsing. I am the foundation. I am the collateral, and I am never going to be paid in full. I close my eyes and listen to the house breathe. It sounds like Julian's laughter echoing in a room with no exits. I have everything I ever wanted, and it is exactly enough to kill me. The hum of the refrigerator kicks in, a low, steady drone that fills the void. I find myself matching my breathing to it. Constant, uninterrupted, controlled. I am a 780. I am a director at a prestigious gallery. I am a bride-to-be. I am the girl in the beautiful house. I get up and walk to the kitchen. I pick up the champagne glass Julian left on the counter. I pour the flat, warm liquid down the drain. I wash the glass. I dry it. I put it back in the cupboard, exactly where it belongs. I wipe the damp ring off the granite. Then I go to the bedroom to wait for him.